Live and Local. It's your connection to local music and more. I'm Kevin Kelly. We're on every Monday through Friday from 12 to 1. And on the show today, we've got some opera to talk about and hear some excerpts from and talk with some people involved in the Sugar Creek Symphony and Song Festival in Watseka, Illinois, which has been happening for a number of years now. They have two operas this weekend, The Barber of Seville of Rossini and The Marriage of Figaro of Mozart. And we'll hear about those. And first on the show will be pianist Ian Gindis, who is a doctoral student at the University of Illinois, giving a recital this weekend. And we'll hear some samples of his playing and a bit about the recital, and also a bit of his about his interesting dual career at the moment here on Live and Local. Stay with us. Overture 2, Mozart's opera, The Marriage of Figaro, which we'll be talking about later on here on Live and Local this morning. That performance was given here by the Royal Concertgebouw Orchestra of Amsterdam, Nicolaus Harnoncourt conducting, and it is Live and Local. My first guest on the show today is Ian Gindis, who is a doctoral student at the School of Music at the University of Illinois in piano performance. Also happens to be in the Army National Guard, and not sure how you managed to juggle those things, but I guess that's one of the things I'm curious about. Paul Wood did a nice article on you as a profile for in the News Gazette. When was that article?
You know, I think it was a couple of years ago. I haven't looked at that article in a while, Kevin. I think that the whole thing is I love stress. I think that's what it is.
You love stress? Yeah.
Actually, the National Guard I joined in 2004, and you know, it was pretty much the time that I was taking care of my father. He was sick at the time, and was with him for about a year. And you know, I was looking for something that was going to help us financially, and plus, you know, that I can give to the country, and that was pretty much what came up as an idea. So,
and you've been very close to your father, musically speaking.
Almost definitely, my father has been very instrumental in helping me over my career. Probably, if it weren't for him, I wouldn't be where I'm at today. He was actually a Russian-trained pianist for a while. He studied with Michel Piastro when he was a younger kid. And Michel Piastro was the concertmaster for the New York Philharmonic, and he also had to learn how to play the piano. And he was out of the Petersburg Conservatory. He came over to our country and taught my father what he knew, and my father instilled that into me. Basically, he worked along and tried to improve my piano playing and technique.
So was your father your first piano teacher?
I would say, definitely he was. He kind of boasts that he started teaching me when I was four. And of course, I don't remember all the way back then, so I don't know. But I think that, he was pretty much my beginning to start my piano career, yeah.
Up through how long did he continue being your main teacher?
I think I was about... You know, I think I was probably about seven when we were driving one day, and he said, you know, do you want to start taking individual piano lessons with a piano teacher? And I said, okay. And that was pretty much when I got started with another teacher. Kathleen Thibert was actually my first teacher. That was when I was about seven.
And where are you from?
California, Southern California.
What landed you in Central Illinois and the University of Illinois?
That's kind of another interesting story.
That's why you're here, to tell interesting
stories. Exactly, exactly. You know, the reason why I ended up in Illinois is because I'm studying with Professor Ian Hobson, a piano teacher over at the university right now. I kind of hopped from one state to the next. I went to the University of Northern Colorado and did my master's over there. and got accepted to that university out of all the universities I applied to. So I ended up in Colorado. Then I applied to several universities for my doctorate, and then I ended up, Illinois accepted me, and that was pretty much it. I was kind of getting tired of doing the plane trips and doing the auditions and stuff, and I said, you know what, this is good for me, and he's a remarkable teacher, Professor Hobson, so I think that this is the route that I was going to go at. So
when you work at, this is a question I probably should know the answer to, but when you work at the University of Illinois and you have a teacher, do you study exclusively with that teacher, or do you also sometimes work with any of the other piano faculty?
Sometimes you do work with the other piano faculty. Primarily I work with Professor Hobson, but, if he's out of town, he's out of town a lot when he's doing his concertizing. So when he's gone, I'll work with the other pianists, Professor Hylas and Dr. Aylin, when he's gone. So we kind of, I'll hop around a little bit, but the majority of the time I try to study with him. So I prefer a lot of what he does on the piano. So yeah, it's pretty much like to work with him. But when he's gone, like I said, yeah, he'll make it available that I could work with the other piano teachers.
And what you've compared with some of the other teachers you've had, what in particular have you been able to get from Professor Hobson's teaching, would you say?
Well, Professor Hobson is extremely particular, and that's good. That's what I was looking for. He doesn't let me get away with a lot. If I come in and I have a mistake, if I have mistakes all over my music, he's going to definitely bring it to my attention, he has a remarkable way of, I'll be playing a Rachmaninoff prelude or concerto, and he'll be able to pick out one note out of how many thousands that I just played in five measures. So, it's kind of, it's outstanding to kind of work under him because of that, because, he's really trying to push me to that direction where I can, I can perfect my interpretations and give those to an audience.
Well, since you mentioned the Rachmaninoff Prelude, I think we have one that you did on a previous recital, was it?
This is actually an etude. Was under his tutelage for a while. He worked with me on this one. This is actually the Opus 39, number 8. And, it's one of my favorite etudes and actually one of my wife's favorite piano pieces that I play. It's extremely difficult. It took me a couple of years to really get it to the point where it's at on this recording that we have. So, yeah, it's one of my favorites. Rachmaninoff has always been a composer that I've just always have cherished, the fact that he has so much repertoire out there that I can learn.
Well, let's hear how you did with it.
Okay.
It's the Opus 39, number 8, Etude of Rachmaninoff. Ian Gindes is my guest and the pianist here on Live and Local. pianist Ian Gindis performing the Rachmaninoff Etude Opus 39, number 8. Was this a recital you did when?
No, this was a recording.
So kind of a studio setup?
Yeah, it was a studio setup. I've performed this probably about 10, 15 times, but then that was kind of the last time I played it, I think, was that studio recording.
Nicely done. Ian's given a recital this Saturday at 7:30 at Smith Music Hall on the University of Illinois campus in Urbana. It's a free program. What's on that recital?
Well, I'm going to be playing Mozart's K310 and A minor sonata, and Schumann's G minor sonata, Opus 22, and then intermission, and then there will be Ravel's Gaspard de la Nuit.
I always forget what does that French title mean?
It stunts me too. It comes from, it's kind of roughly translated as the night and its magic spells. It's one of Bertrand, the poet that actually wrote those pieces. It's kind of that's where it came from. It was a title that it's a French title, Fantasies in Gaspard de la Nuit. I'm not going to try to pronounce the French pronunciation of it, but I think that's what it roughly translates into.
And then there's it always strikes me as one of his more morbid mm-hmm. pieces.
It is, and it's kind of funny that you said that, because actually that's what he was. Bertrand, and I think that's how you pronounce the poet's name, he was more concerned with the grotesque when he wrote these works, these types of poets, that the poems that Ravel based this music on, and it kind of has that type of very morbid feel to it because of that. Probably one of his, I would say, yeah, more of his morbid works, I would, yeah, for sure.
The second movement is Le Gibé, which is
yes,
the scaffold, isn't it?
It's a gibbet, actually.
And, yeah, what is that?
Well, a gibbet is kind of a, I don't know how can I explain it. It's almost like an encasing that you hang from a tree. Back in the day, they used it to capture pirates, and if you've seen Pirates of the Caribbean, they had actually. It's interesting they had those in that movie where they had this. It's kind of like I said, it's an encasing that goes around the human, and they attach it to the human. They hang them from a tree, and then the person rots in there, so you'll see.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, not very pleasant. Yeah, not very the most pleasant thing, pleasant way to go either. So,
well, since we're talking about it, here's a little bit of that movement from Gaspard de la Nuit. This is not you playing; it's Vlado Perlmutter, who studied for a while with Ravel himself, mm-hmm. and sort of gives his interpretations a bit of a cachet. But let's see what he had musically in mind when he had this. Not very pleasant visual image.
No.
Music by Ravel here from Gaspard de la Nuit on Live and Local. It's a beginning portion of Le Gibé, the gibbet, from Gaspard de la Nuit of Maurice Ravel, Vlado Perlmutter performing here on Live and Local. You can hear Ian Gindis play the complete suite on his recital Saturday evening. And I'm looking at the text here by Bertrand at the end of this. Ian, you were talking to me as we were listening to that repeated. Would you say it's a
it's
B natural?
A B flat.
B flat. Mm-hmm. Represents a tolling of a bell.
Right. It's part of the poem. There's the bell that sounds the bells, and the bells in the background are going while you have this grotesque image of the skeleton hanging from this gibbet.
Yes. Or perhaps some spider weaving a length of muslin to decorate this strangled neck. It's the tolling of the bell that sounds from the walls of a town beyond the horizon, and the hanging corpse glows red in the setting sun. What made you pick that piece?
Well, yeah, right.
Especially to end the concert with.
My father would probably tell you the reason why I picked it is probably one of the most hardest pieces to play, the whole set of three, and I was pretty intrigued with trying to play the hardest pieces on the piano, but I think one of the reasons why I like that piece in particular and this whole set of pieces is just absolutely interesting how the music really makes the poem come to life, and especially during the Impressionistic period, you know, where a lot of those composers were into doing that, and that was a lot of their music represented these poems that this one in particular did that so much, and it's so much of a contrast between a lot of the romantic music I play. You know, it's one of the pieces that kind of stands out as pretty much one of the most, I would say, the most dominant pieces in during that Impressionistic period.
Well, you have on your recital a nice variety of pieces on the program. You have Mozart from the classic era, Schumann from the romantic, and then this impressionistic piece. Mm-hmm. What are demands made of you by your duties in the National Guard?
Well, the National Guard actually has me, I'll do a 1 week in a month, deal during the month, during the whole year, and then they do a 2 week, session where I'll have to do active duty for 2 weeks during the summer. So it's not too much to divert me from what I'm doing in college. So
do they ever ask you to play the piano?
You know what? I've played the piano one time, actually. We were at a ball, a function for the brigade, and my wife actually suggested, she said, "Here's a piano, why don't you go sit down and play?" And I said, "Well, I don't know." And she actually, I went down there and played a little bit, and that was pretty remarkable. Probably the most interesting experience I had, I was actually in basic training, and this was unbelievable. We were all kind of sitting in this room, and everybody's terrified, and we're about ready to get shipped down to the basic training site, you know, to get ready to train for 14 weeks. And we're in this whole, I guess, this big cafeteria, and they had a stage, and they had a piano up there and upright, and the sergeant who was up there, who was over us, and there's about 300 to 400 people in this auditorium, he said, who knows how to play the piano over here? So, of course, me being the most prideful person in the audience had to raise my hand, and he said, "Get up here." So I walk up to the stage.
That was an order, huh?
Yeah, I really had no choice. He said, "Get up here." And I got up there, and he said, "What do you know how to play?" And I said, "Well, I know how to play the classics, Beethoven and Mozart and Rachmaninoff." Of course, he didn't know what I was talking about. But anyways, he said, "Well, sit down and play." So I started playing. Actually, I started playing Beethoven's Waldstein Sonata. And, you know, I think everybody was terrified that I was actually just diddling around the piano. And then eventually I got to a section where it actually started sounding complicated. And everybody kind of got silent. And I think I actually played La Campanella after that by Liszt. Everybody loved that. And it was a really awesome experience. But very stressful probably, too.
I imagine they were pretty surprised. They didn't know they had a classical pianist in their midst.
You know, I think that was a thing, and the guy called me down, and he said, "You're not going to get into any trouble, are you, while you're here?" And I didn't know what that meant, but sure enough, it was really cool to do that. And he was actually, there was one point where he said, "Okay, everybody needs to march out of here." So he said, and I said, okay, well, what am I supposed to use? And play something on the piano, march everybody out of here. So I'm like trying to think of something that I could play. I'm like, okay, let's see, Rachmaninoff, B minor, Prelude, okay, and maybe speed it up or something. And he said, you need to speed that up. So I'm playing it, and everybody's marching out of the room, and it was crazy. But
gives a different meaning to the phrase command performance.
You know, I'll tell you, it was definitely commanding. Let's just put it that way, right?
Your tempo of a classic, determined by your sergeant, mm-hmm. and how fast the soldiers need to get out of the mess. Think about that next time you perform the Turkish March of Mozart or something like that.
Oh, most definitely, right? Or maybe even the Rachmaninoff G minor. That probably would have been more acceptable as far as a march goes, I would think.
Well, good luck on your recital Saturday. Ian Gindes performing Saturday night at 7:30 at Smith Recital Hall on the University of Illinois campus. It's a free program. A Mozart sonata, a Schumann sonata, and a Ravel impressionistic piece. Don't slit your wrists at the end of that one.
I'm going to try not to.
Well, I was referring to the audience. You better not. You won't finish the. You won't have another recital, and you won't be any good to the National Guard either.
No, and luckily that sergeant isn't going to be there. So.
Well, it's a beautiful piece, Ravel, and it's a wonderful program.
Most definitely.
Thanks for joining us on the show.
Thank you, Kevin.
And here is Ian Gindes playing. A movement from which movement is it from one of the English suites?
This
of Bach?
Is the prelude. This is the first movement to the A minor English suite.
On Live and Local here on FM 90.9. Oh, before we play it, I guess I should say that our broadcast today is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, where visitors of all ages can uncover and discover the wonderment of America's musical past through guided tours Monday through Friday at the University of Illinois. More information is at sousaarchives.org, and we'll be hearing some from The Marriage of Figaro and The Barber of Seville coming up in just a few moments on Live and Local. Thank you. And that was a movement from the English Suite number, oh, which one? I didn't bring that note back in. I just moved studios and I didn't bring that in with me. In any event, a performance by pianist Ian Gindes, who was just on our first portion of our show. And you can hear him play Mozart, Schumann, and Ravel this Saturday evening at 7:30 at Smith Recital Hall on the University of Illinois campus in Urbana. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. We have support today for our show from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods on the corner of 6th and University in Champaign, providing Champaign-Urbana with a wide array of foods from around the world, including cheeses, olives, spices, hot sauces, olive oils, and more. World Harvest invites you to join them in supporting public radio. And on this portion of the show, we invite you to join the cast and orchestra and pianists, I guess, of the Sugar Creek Symphony and Song Festival in Watseka, Illinois, which happens this weekend. It's also an arts festival as well, with two operas being given. But they're rather closely related, The Barber of Seville by Rossini and The Marriage of Figaro by Mozart. And we have with us two of the stars of the cast of The Barber of Seville, Adriana Zabala, who plays the role of Rosina in The Barber, and Dr. Bartolo, Matthew Lau, is with us, and also John Whitney, who is, what is your role at the Sugar Creek Festival, John?
Well, I'm a founder of the organization, and I'm also the communications director.
And tell us about the festival overall and some of the activities aside from the operas this particular weekend.
Well, the Cherry Street Art Fest will be going on Saturday. It helps round out the weekend so you can come to our area and hear some great music, some great performances, and the lovely voices of people like artists like Adriana and Matthew, and then spend the day walking about town and going to the arts festival for lovely art vendors, and there'll be food throughout the day, and they have these historical monologues that highlight the roles of local folks in shaping area history, and there'll be music on the lawn, so you get music throughout the day and throughout the weekend.
The name Symphony and Song, when you first got started, there actually was an orchestra concert, if I remember.
Yeah, we would mix it up a little bit and have recitals with instrumentalists and occasionally have a symphony concert. We tend to like alliteration at Sugar Creek, so we had a mega music marathon and Sugar Creek Symphony and Song, and there's a lot of,
Alliteration is good. Mm-hmm. It makes for good marketing, and it sounds especially good on radio, but the symphony hasn't happened for a while. It's been pretty much the opera.
Right. We've focused more on that. And, part of it is the economy as well. The last couple of years have been more difficult for the organization in terms of raising money.
For every organization.
And tickets and all of that. So we focused on what we consider our core activity, which is to produce opera and to bring great talent to the area and put on a great show.
And you're doing two performances of The Barber of Seville on Friday and Saturday, each night at 8. These are going to be at the First Methodist Church there?
Yes. We take this small, intimate environment of the First Methodist Church in Watseka. We build out a stage, and we have a backdrop, and bring in set materials, and we have gorgeous and actually sometimes very funny costumes. The role of Don Basilio, I would say, is probably the funniest costume I've seen in quite a while. This very huge hat and something that kind of looks like a giant frock that this guy is. Very form-fitting frock.
Well, these are both comic operas. So yes.
Which fits
just fine.
Well. Yeah.
And then you're doing The Marriage of Figaro. That's the one that'll be done with a piano accompaniment?
No, it's we'll have a chamber orchestra.
Chamber orchestra for that. Mm-hmm. And the other one is also chamber orchestra?
It's a 19-piece orchestra.
19-piece, mm-hmm. Good. So. And that'll be Marriage of Figaro on Sunday, just one performance at 3 in the afternoon.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, in case you may think, well, I don't know if I know The Barber of Seville, here is some music that I think will remind you that you've probably at least heard a tune or two. This is the overture, or part of the overture, music by Rossini on Live and Local. And that's a bit of the overture from the opera The Barber of Seville by Gioachino Rossini. Which performance did we play? I think it was the Chamber Orchestra of Europe with Claudio Abbado conducting, and we're going to hear a couple of excerpts from the opera in just a moment. But I said at the outset that the two operas being done this weekend at Sugar Creek Festival are closely related. They're based on the same texts, aren't they? Who wants to fill us in on that? Or related texts?
They're related texts. Beaumarchais wrote three plays around the same time as our American Revolution. The first is Barber of Seville. The second is The Marriage of Figaro. The third rarely gets performed is La Mère Coupable. And they're in that order. The first is set by Rossini and the second by Mozart.
How does the third one get translated?
The Ghost of Versailles, even though it's The Guilty Mother, is the literal translation. But in its operatic manifestation, I believe there's a setting by Corigliano.
Yeah, that's
is The Ghost of Versailles. That is, in fact, the third Beaumarchais play.
Have you seen that or been involved in that?
I've not. No, I've not.
I wonder if it is at all Rossini and more Mozartian.
Apparently not.
You'd think that he couldn't have written that opera without having those two in mind. But that's neither here nor there.
Massenet also set the last one.
The Ghost? Did he?
And there he calls it Cherubin for Cherubino.
Cherubino. All right. Well, tell us about the basic stories and the connections between the two operas.
Well, I can open that with – I have I would say the privilege in the opera world of playing one character in one of the – plays, The Marriage of Figaro. I play Cherubino very often. And interestingly, I play Rosina in Barber of Seville, and I play one character in one opera that actually impregnates another character that I play in the third play. That's relatively rare. So in the Barber of Seville, the character that I play, Rosina, the young ward of Dr. Bartolo, is the countess in The Marriage of Figaro. She becomes the Countess Almaviva. So for those who are familiar with the opera, with the two operas, I think it's rather interesting that this very feisty, free, and spirited young woman becomes this disappointed and saddened and almost imprisoned member of the nobility in The Marriage of Figaro, the Countess.
Both of them comic, though, with a lot of not necessarily mistaken identity, but deliberately hidden identities, right?
Oh, sure. Plenty of that. I mean, when you think of the fact that especially in the Rossini treatment, these characters are derived from the Italian Commedia dell'arte, these archetypes of comedy and theater, And one very modern correlation we have is the show from the 1970s and 80s, Three's Company. Three's Company was also directly derived from Commedia dell'arte. Jack Tripper was Arlecchino, and Suzanne Summers, she was Colombina.
I didn't know that.
Absolutely. And it's the same kind of issues of keeping one person away from another and mistaken identity there and a deliberate mistaken identity there. And I'm playing something I'm not. And as we remember with John Ritter's portrayal, very comedic, physically comedic humor. And these are the same elements we find with Figaro, with Rosina, with Bartolo. And they're all stemming from, if I'm not mistaken, a 16th century Italian convention. So there are all kinds of threads that bring that comedy into throughout the centuries, into the present.
We have a couple of excerpts we're going to play. Hopefully we'll have time for at least part of both of them, from The Barber of Seville. This is not from your performance, which, of course, hasn't happened yet, so it hasn't been recorded. I don't know if you are going to record it or not, but the performances this weekend at Sugar Creek are Friday and Saturday for the Rossini opera, The Barber of Seville, and then Sunday afternoon for the Mozart. We have what you've selected as one of the most recognizable portions of the Rossini. You want to set that up for us, one of you, Matthew?
Sure. This is the Largo al Factotum. It is Figaro's entrance aria. Many of you will recognize it from the Bugs Bunny cartoon. Figaro is a very, very interesting character, as Adriano just mentioned. He's Arlecchino. But the author of the original plays, Beaumarchais, created this name, Figaro. It actually, his dad's name was Caron, and he was the fi of Caron, fi meaning son. So he was, unfortunately, the bastard son of his dad, Caron. And Figaro has come down through the centuries to represent every man. It's why, even to this day, one of the most, the biggest newspapers in the world is Le Figaro. Because it is what's happening today. What's the current news? What's
the everyday.
Yes. This character is a very interesting character. And in this aria in particular, you hear him address that he doesn't have a title. He, however, is the smartest guy around. And he's trying desperately to figure out, how can I make sense of this world in a place where I know what should happen here and nobody else is letting me even speak.
And he does everything. This is the title of the aria, the factotum, the person who does everything. And in the very famous passage, Figaro, 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 he's, as a kid, I thought he was calling someone else Figaro. And he's saying, everyone's calling my name at all times. They want me to do this. They want me to do that. Figaro, do this.
And of course, back then, barbers did everything.
Exactly.
They didn't just cut hair. They
That's
did all
right.
kinds of things.
They were the veterinarian. They were looking after the dog of the house. They were doing the hair. They were passing a note. They were bringing this. They were building that.
They will let your blood if you need.
That's, exactly.
Leeches,
they were the surgeon.
Probably.
Right. The one who did everything.
A little scary having the barber. Maybe that's where Sondheim got his idea for Sweeney
That's
Todd.
That's right.
I don't No, well, in any event,
Trust the barber.
Here we have who is in the role of Figaro? Manuel Ausensi, which is somebody none of us knows.
Nope.
In a performance with the orchestra and chorus of Napoli, Rossini Orchestra of Napoli, Silvia Varviso, and it's the Largo al Factotum here on Live and Local. Well, we got to that portion of that particular aria where, as we were just talking as we're listening to that, that if a non-operatic singer is going to imitate an operatic singer, chances are they're going to do that Figaro thing. And that was, in this case, forgot his name again, Manuel Ausensi with Silvio Varviso conducting the orchestra from the Barber of Seville, the Largo al Factotum. I am the factotum of this town. By Rossini, which is going to be at Sugar Creek Symphony and Song Festival this weekend in Watsika, Friday and Saturday at 8 o'clock, and then the Marriage of Figaro. Did I say that right? Barber of Seville is Friday and Saturday.
That's
Marriage
right.
of Figaro is Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock, and we have two of the singers from the Barber with us in the role of Rosina, Adriana Zabala. And as Dr. Bartolo, who is obviously a bass, as you can tell from Matthew Lau's voice with us as well. And we have another excerpt here that we'll hear partway into it. Do you want to talk about that a little bit, set this up for us?
Sure. This is a really nice duet between Figaro and Rosina. And in this scene, Rosina has written a note to her lover, and she's trying to figure out a way for it to be delivered. And of course, because Figaro is the one who takes care of everything, she thinks, you know, I'll get Figaro to give it to him. Because not only can he do it, but I can also trust him. He's a good guy. Figaro and Rosina are sort of a bit of a male and female version of each other in a way. If Rosina had a bit more social freedom, she might be a little bit like Figaro. She's very spirited and very clever. So she recognizes a kindred spirit in Figaro. And the reason I mention that is because Rossini gives them music which mirrors each other. They're imitating each other. They're singing together. And in this piece, Figaro is saying, you know, she is so clever. She's even clever, more clever than I am sometimes. She's already written this note. I said she should write a note. She's already written it. And she's saying, you know, Figaro is just fantastic. And even though he could have a little bit to learn from me. So they're just, they're kind of celebrating their kindredness with very effervescent music. And they're also both excited for different reasons to put the plan in motion to get this note to this lover.
And we hear Teresa Braganza as Rosina. And once again, it's Manuel Asensio as Figaro. And let's give it a listen on Live and Local. Figaro and Rosina sort of celebrating each other, I guess.
And their plan.
And their plan as it sets in motion the rest of the opera of Rossini's The Barber of Seville. And we have with us the Rosina from the Sugar Creek Festival's production this weekend, Adriana Zabala. We don't have Figaro with us. We do have, just as well, Dr. Bartolo, Matthew Lau. And who's the conductor of this production?
James Lau? Maestro James Lau.
Lau, all right.
Yes, and
Kevin Prina has been, I think he's been a student at the university, maybe?
University of Illinois? He spoke, he worked in the Illinois Summer Youth Music Camp this summer, and right. I'm not sure exactly of his whole background, but unfortunately he's stepped back from the production, and so his cover is taking over.
He'll do that.
Kevin is a great person to have in Sugar Creek, and we hope he'll...
Good.
It's been past productions. We hope he'll be back next year.
Well, I just saw that we ran out of time even quicker than I thought. I have to say really quickly that your web address is sugarcreekfestival.org, and the productions are this weekend. And